day, everyone, and thank you for joining today's conference call. Today's call is being recorded. For opening remarks and introductions, I'll turn the conference over to Ms. Carol Iwanu. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Welcome to the special audio conference presented today by Pike & Fisher, publisher of the Digital Discovery and e-evidence newsletter and web reference service. My name is Carol Iwanu, and I'm the managing editor of the Pike & Fisher e-discovery publications. Today, of course, the legal profession is reaching a milestone of sorts, as this is the red-letter day where the amendments to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure that address electronically stored information become effective. It's also quite an important day for records managers. Records management will be discussed on at least two national public radio shows before the day is through, and I suspect by several other popular media outlets as well. So you might say that December 1st, 2006 is the day that records management became ready for prime time. Before we discuss what has caused records management to be catapulted into the spotlight, there's some minor housekeeping matters to attend to. First, today's conference will run for 90 minutes. The final 15 minutes or so will be devoted to questions and answers from you, the audience. As questions occur to you, please submit them by email anytime during the program to audio@pf.com. We'll hold them and propose them to our panel during the final 15-minute Q&A session. Again, the address for your emailed questions is audio@p, as in Pike, f, as in Fisher.com. If you prefer to phone in your questions, you can do so when we break for the live Q&A by pressing star 1 on your touchtone dial. You'll be reminded of that before we move into the Q&A portion of the program. If you experience any technical difficulties during the conference, simply push star 0 for operator assistance. Again, that's star 0 for operator assistance. I know we have several locations where we have many, many listeners in one room, and if there are any difficulties with those transmissions, please avail yourself of that star 0 option. The supporting materials for today's event have been sent to registrants in a reminder email package. That package contains some excellent commentary from our panelists, as well as several PowerPoint slides. If you have not received this material, please use the audio@pf.com email, and we'll get those materials emailed to you immediately. Finally, after the audio conference is concluded, we'll be sending you an additional email with a link to an evaluation form. We'd certainly appreciate getting feedback from each person who's listening in today. So if the individual who actually registered for the call and conference could please forward the form or the link to those sharing the line with them, it would be most appreciated. That link also contains information for securing CLE credit to the extent that it is available, so it's an important form for you to be aware of for your own purposes as well. With those preliminaries out of the way, I'm very pleased to introduce the moderators for today's program, Mr. Carl Shinneman of Special Counsel. Carl thinks very creatively about ESI solutions and is actually the creator of this program. I'm quite pleased to turn the proceedings and the microphone over to Carl at this time.
Thank you, Carol. And, yeah, Pittsburgh's now on, too, I heard. I was going to mention that. First of all, there are biographies in the materials which really show you how special everyone is on the panel. And rather than read the material, which you can easily read yourself, I decided I'm going to introduce everyone using the theme that this is the first day of the new Federal Rules of Civil Procedure dealing with the electronic evidence. So let me tell you how each panelist ties into the first presentation on electronic records since the new rules were enacted. Carol Chotsky is the president-elect of ARMA, the first group I think of when I think of records managers. She wrote the first graduate-level treatment of records and information management, domesticating information. She's also doing the first academic study of records management across the United States. Tom Utiger is one of the first technology pioneers in electronic records management with 15 years of experience in the field, cutting his teeth in the thorny area of financial services companies. In addition, Tom's first job in high school was in the records management department for Clark County, Nevada, which I understand now sets the bar for municipal government records management systems. Bill Dodaro, corporate counsel for eDiscovery at Bayer, is someone who I worked with in staffing on one of the first large-scale tort cases, using hundreds of contract attorneys to review and produce documents under the successful management of an outside law firm. We successfully met deadlines, and there were no spoliation charges, showing this model works. It's a strategy which is commonly adopted at many companies today. He's also one of the first in-house lawyers who's actively testing different e-discovery technology tools on his existing document repository. Linda Davis is in charge of the records management at DuPont, the first company people think of when legal innovation is discussed. DuPont seems to get so much press for legal innovation with their convergence model, limiting the number of outside law firms they use, called the DuPont model, acting as a plaintiff when it makes economic sense, and they've put a good deal of thought into their records management program. Jim Mikowitz is the first person I know to hold what I describe as the trifecta in career experiences. Jim has held very senior level positions at Fortune 500 companies in both electronic discovery and records management at Tyco and DuPont, a senior level consulting position with the international legal consultants Altman Weil, and now he has married the two as a process guru at the e-discovery and records management company ACT Litigation. Jim,
that was easy.
Daly, who uses easy buttons at e-discovery conferences, is a partner at the first law firm in the country, or possibly the world, which does nothing but electronic discovery and electronic records management consulting. Along with Jim Michowitz, he also helped me compile the material for Discovery Land, the first process simulation board game for eDiscovery. Rob Bernard is the general manager in charge of the Global Records Management Program for Microsoft, the first company which people think of when software is mentioned, and he's the first friend I backpacked across Europe with. Back then I never knew he'd be so important, and you never would have guessed it either. While it might be more interesting to devote the next 85 minutes to our exploits in the Hofbräu House in Munich in New Year's 1985, it's probably not a good use of our time or for Rob or my career. Lastly, my name is Carl Shinneman. I'm Vice President of Special Counsel, and I'm the first person in the country to call electronic records management a hobby, since I really don't sell anything in this area, but have spent much of this last 6 years of my career as an entrepreneur in the e-discovery world. So I believe this could be the first large-scale presentation on a technology-related topic where the audience can't be wondering in the back of their mind, what's that guy selling? Back on January 26, 2006, a panel like this one and I presented what I think was a well-received analysis with a set of eDiscovery All-Star panelists on how the process of eDiscovery is often ignored. So we dissected the nuts and bolts of eDiscovery projects, started a series of presentations a few of us have done around the country on how to develop better eDiscovery process by examining frequent staffing and technology mistakes. Next, I thought it would be fun to dive into the electronic records management field, because so many people are diving into e-discovery right now that the pool is getting crowded. It also seems like the two fields are related. In fact, one of my friends who's listening into this presentation in Pittsburgh said he's in charge of both e-discovery and records management at his company. We decided that records management is, quote, the bastard child of e-discovery, because oftentimes without the shock of impending litigation, it's hard to get anyone really excited about practicing good electronic records management. So for today's panel discussion, we now look again to an esteemed panel of all-stars to advise us how to appropriately and proactively manage electronic records, and how to do this as well as possible. We're going to cover the following six sections. First, we begin with an overview of records management. Secondly, we're going to delve into the lessons learned from eDiscovery. Third, we'll give some advice on how to start the records management dialogue within your company or law firm. Fourth, we'll explore implementing a records management solution. Fifth, identify reasonable expectations for records management process. And sixth, confront the question of what does the future of records management hold. Some of the experts are going to talk more in some of the sections than others. However, they're all going to have plenty of points to make over the course of 90 minutes. You may also notice you've got material in front of you. Some of that is really relevant. You might want to open up the page for Rob Bernard under his section, because he's going to talk about his slides. Jim Michowitz was filler because we wanted to get the CLE board to know that we're going to be talking about a lot of record management topic points. Actually, it's about Six Sigma. It's very good stuff. Now let's talk about records management generally. As an overview of record management, Carol Chotsky, can you give a brief overview of what an electronic records management system accomplishes for a company? Maybe talk a little bit about a properly executed life cycle for a document.
Sure. What ideally, what an electronic records management system would do would be to identify any piece of information either received or created by an organization, and then force it to go through a proper life cycle. That means that the process of records management has to start a lot earlier than when people think it should start. It has to include content management and document management, document control, document creation. It has to include creation of web pages. And it has to include things like voice over IP, IM, etc. The idea is that by identifying it as soon as it is created, and that's not necessarily controlling it, but identifying it, you can then find it again. Or you can add a tag to it, metadata or whatever you want to call it, that puts it in a proper bucket so you can find it again, or so that you can insert it into a business process. The idea is that you lower the badness value of the record and raise its goodness value. So you raise its level of asset and lower its level of negative effect on the organization. The life cycle, then, most people look at the life cycle and they say, well, it's created, you use it, you throw it away. That's an observation. That's not a life cycle. In the life cycle, things are created, they're distributed, they're used, they're set aside and used a little bit. Then they're sent to some storage where you're not going to use it hardly at all, if ever, and then you might want to either throw it away or keep it for a very long period of time. The problem is that at any point after the item of information has been created, it can be called up for litigation. It doesn't just get called up once it's been created and finalized or declared a record, as the document management companies want to call it. So the whole idea is to look at the whole life cycle and to control the whole life cycle. And that means training people, that means having an appropriate taxonomy, and that also means having appropriate tools.
Linda Davis, we've heard the bad news surveys from the Cahasset Group for the last few years. I just received one yesterday from a Big Five accounting firm saying only about 7% of the companies in the country think that they're ready for e-discovery or managing electronic records. There are lots of surveys like that floating around. Which point out companies generally don't think they have effective electronic record management systems. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think for the most part, even though we have been in the world of computer systems and technology for quite some time, I think it's been filtering into our work environment a lot faster than we can manage it. First of all, you know, we went through a process of trying to identify all the different electronic systems we have here. And that's a very daunting task for a couple reasons. One, and I've done a lot of benchmarking with different companies, is that a lot of companies will create their own homegrown systems and then fail to connect the dots, fail to think about the record life cycle. In addition to that, there's a lack of understanding. I can recall being at several ARMA conferences in the early stages of electronic records management focus, wherein people were talking about, well, what is your retention period for your electronic records or for your email? Not recognizing at the time, we were talking about one records management retention control schedule. A record is a record, whether it's electronic or paper. And I think it took a while for people in the businesses to understand that, at least the employees, not the records managers or even IT, but the average Joe employee. I also think that a lot of the software applications that were first developed had no records management focus or component whatsoever. So now we're dealing with systems that do not have the capability of monitoring and tracking a document through its entire life cycle. I think another issue is that it's not as easy. If you don't have a strong electronic records management focus and an understanding of where all your documents are, and we all know that with the new rules, we are now required to know where all of our documents are and exactly what systems we are using. In the days of paper, we knew that we could take a trip out to Iron Mountain and there were all of our inactive records that were ready for our review, and we had systems where we could look for that paper. That is not the case when you're looking for electronic records. So it certainly is challenging for a lot of companies, and I think until recently we really haven't had the software applications that would allow us to manage records during its entire life cycle.
That leads into Tom's question. From a technology standpoint, are there any simple technology solutions out there?
I hate to call it, say it depends, but at a basic level, the technology required in order to implement records management really varies with a couple of factors. Some basic factors has to do with what industry you're in. Different industries have different levels of records management requirements. The other question is the maturity of your organization. How mature is your records management program? You can't jump from no records management at your organization to full-blown very sophisticated, tightly integrated records management and lifecycle controls at a company. So what you need to do in many cases is you need to step in with at a very basic level, develop your records management maturity, technical maturity, and business execution maturity around records management. And also, it depends on what level of records management sophistication. I mean, if you run a small little Photoshop around the corner, your records management requirements are very different than if you are a global Fortune 200 kind of organization that creates records in multiple legal jurisdictions and has very large, very sophisticated technical systems that, as Linda was discussing, have not ever had the idea of needing to be externally controlled by records management processes. So at a basic level, one needs to start with relatively simple approaches and begin the practice of records management. There are no quick and easy silver bullets out there for records management. And from a technical perspective, really you need to start with the business side and begin developing the business side and getting the businesses integrated into making the technical choices and participating in the technical side of records management.
Okay. One of the prime drivers of this dialogue is the messy world of electronic discovery, and I'd like to talk for the next 15 minutes about what records management can learn from e-discovery. The scary thing here is we just talked to a couple of people with a record management focus, and we're already behind schedule, and now we're going to have lawyers talk for 15 minutes or people with legal backgrounds. So we'll see what happens here. But today's December 1st. Jim Daly, would you care to share some legal reasons based on what we've learned from the field of electronic discovery for wanting to improve records management? And you get bonus points if you can tie it into today's date.
Well, thanks, Carl. Yeah, first of all, I'd like to thank Pike and Fisher and you for sponsoring this very helpful and timely discussion. Carol alluded to the fact that today is the D-Day, the December 1 date, the effective date for the new federal e-discovery amendments that according to a number of judges will have widespread impact upon federal and state courts nationwide with respect to e-discovery. And I like to think of there being three lessons learned from the e-discovery wars that we've had to date relative to records management. And these lessons will be even heightened by the impact of the new federal rules. The first is that e-discovery, risk, and cost is really a symptom of unmanaged electronic information, primarily unstructured electronic information in the form of email and Microsoft Office documents. I remember when Jim Michalowicz and I were part of the inaugural meeting of the Sedona Working Group on these issues, and that we were asked, well, what do we want to get out of participation in the Sedona Working Group? And my comment was, I'd like to see some sort of life cycle or big picture perspective with respect to e-discovery. That is to say, look at it as a process, not just a project. And Jim Michalowicz and I probably were kindred spirits in that respect, and he's done a great job of bringing Six Sigma and other process-related methodology to deal with this as really a strategic issue, not just a tactical issue. The other two lessons learned are know yourself, and Morgan Stanley's the poster child of this lesson. You have to know what your electronically stored information is, whether it's in backup media, whether it's online, and to the extent you make inaccurate or incomplete representations of the court, you not only devastate your credibility with the court, but you can in effect, harm your client's interests. And the third lesson learned is know the rules. I did a little research preparing for this, and the Supreme Court, in its order adopting the new federal rules, and that order was sent to Congress on April 12, 2006, said specifically that the new rules not only govern in proceedings commenced after December 1, as of December 1, these new rules apply to all pending proceedings on December 1, insofar as just and practicable. So that language, just and practicable, is going to be bandied about quite a bit in recent or in upcoming weeks and months as to how, not only cases, but for all pending cases, how these new rules will impact not only what folks have done or haven't done in terms of records management of electronic media, in terms of disclosures.
Bill Dodaro, you've managed a number of electronic discovery projects and are tied in with how other companies struggle with electronic discovery. What are the biggest challenges with issuing preservation orders and collecting electronic records at the outset of the litigation?
Well, thank you, and I'll start by noting there's not enough time to describe the challenges, but I'll try. Certainly on the issuance of preservation orders, there are a number of challenges that come into play, and I hope to speak later to some of the abilities to deal with those challenges. But first, when the preservation orders are issued, and certainly some of the older mindset of waiting until litigation is actually filed is no longer valid. It should be noted also, and a challenge for a large company, is capturing the corporate knowledge and graduating that up to the appropriate levels so that legal can make the decision to issue hold orders, again, early and appropriately in the absence of litigation. And large companies harnessing that knowledge and getting it appropriately up the chain to answer the when question does definitely become a challenge. The distribution of the hold orders, both broad to demonstrate appropriately that the right target group as well as content is being held, but at the same time not overwhelming the organization and making it meaningless in terms of the hold order issuance in and of itself. So too, the phrasing of the hold order, making it so that when it is issued and disseminated, it is of value and understandable and identifies those categories both reasonably and appropriately that should be held, but at the same time, not too narrowly that in the absence of litigation at that time, but later when litigation is pending, could be viewed with 20/20 hindsight in a harmful way to your organization. Certainly outside the scope of this call, but from an internal lawyer's perspective, managing the questions that come up with and the sheer volume of debate as well as frequency with which those questions come up on the issuance of a hold. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, is, and I hope to speak to this part in particular later, demonstrating compliance with the issuance of the hold, acceptance of it, appropriate dissemination. I think gone are the days when you can simply put an email out in a broadcast-type fashion and call it a day, and so demonstrating compliance with that. So my advice in thinking on that portion on the preservation orders is to develop thinking now before litigation is filed and have those thoughts and measures in place before litigation comes. In terms of collecting electronically stored information, I'll touch briefly but quickly on when the hold is issued. Certainly that is the first step, but secondly, the necessary preservation and or collection of electronically stored information. The challenges there, of course, in large companies become, in the absence of the utopia Carol described, humongous challenges in terms of content and or custodial-based collection. You may not know from a content perspective at that early juncture what you need to collect, how often you should collect in a dynamic environment where information is created, generated, managed, discarded, and yet more is coming in, capturing and refreshing those kinds of collections. Appropriate collection so that metadata and appropriate collections can take place across unstructured, shared type files, local files, archives, far away places like local PC drives, thumb drives, if your organization allows the use of those kinds of technologies, while inexpensive, pose large challenges from a collection and preservation standpoint. So my concluding remark here is that those kinds of systems, and I think we all understand the obligations we have as internal and external counsel to understand that currently in the absence of litigation and to make sure you've got that understanding of your systems in place to accomplish the challenges or at least try to deal with the challenges I've described.
Jim Michowitz, we worked together to develop an e-discovery process game called Discovery Land, which highlights mistakes that are often made in these e-discovery projects. Jim, what can go wrong in e-discovery projects when your electronic records are unorganized?
Carl, I guess I'll start off by answering that question. That one of the small responsibilities I had with some of my former employers, as given to me by a general counsel or an AGC, was don't let records management or discovery management become the issue in a case. And I think in this particular question you're asking, it kind of brings that issue up in front of us. And first off, let me answer it by saying, you know, when we say are unorganized, Jim Daly just referred to unmanaged records in an environment. What I'd like to identify as unorganized as being records that are not cataloged, not indexed, or not classified. And what I mean by classified is not part of some kind of records retention schedule. And I think without having those in place in some ways, and that isn't just records, I think it does extend into other areas of ESI, it hampers some of the early steps in document discovery, which includes the definition, identification, and preservation steps, which Bill just talked about. So my feeling is that because there are not really those systems in place, and when I'm talking about systems, they don't necessarily need to be computer systems, but really just kind of like some kind of classification system or identification system, it really is going to hamper the efforts of the discovery team to go ahead and identify this. Now, what can go wrong as a result of that? Well, one is it could become more costly. Just to try to identify what is really the wheat from the chaff will be more costly. Number two, it can be more disruptive of the businesses, which is always a concern of the in-house legal team when going through this. And the third one is it potentially could lead to rules violations. It could lead to spoliation in that during this process, because of the unorganized piece of the collection, there may be the chance that a record is altered or in some way there's spoliation being done. And then there's the other potential violation, which is the failure to produce. Just trying to go through this unorganized collection may lead to, again, inability to go ahead and put this into a format that lends to the production in a timely approach.
Let me see here. Jim Daly, actually, one of those points that Mike was made sort of ties into this. When records management professionals talk about retention and e-discovery experts talk about preservation, are there differences between these two concepts?
Yes, sir. Very much so, Carl. Just amplifying what Jim Michael just said, though, is that there is no current easy button. I know you used that, referred to that prompt that I sometimes
that
use.
That was easy.
But there is no easy button for applying the very important tasks of declaring a record, classifying a record, and signing a retention period to it, let alone a hold notice, in the unstructured electronic records environment of email and Microsoft Office files. And try as they might, big players like EMC, IBM, Antic, and others are probably years away from unitary solutions. So until then, we have to do our best with a combination of human and technological processes. But with respect to, you know, the specific question of preservation, retention, one is really a legal concept, one is a records management and business concept. The business and management concept is retention, where we have a general rule establishing a policy for what is a business record. We have schedules around how long we would normally keep those records that memorialize a decision and are part of our institutional memory, have value. And then there's preservation, which is really a legal concept that, for whatever reason, whether a regulation, whether it's relevant to litigation or a pending investigation, this document, this piece of information, which may or may not be a business record in the ordinary course of business, needs to be preserved. And it needs to be preserved so the other side isn't aggrieved and they can have a full, fair day in court. The whole concept of spoliation is that you've spoiled the other side's ability to put on a case. You've spoiled their bite of the apple, so to speak. So I think that's the fundamental difference between retention and preservation. One is a business concept, one is a legal concept.
Bill Dodaro, where would you say the focus of e-discovery was from, say, 2000 to 2005 in those sort of pioneer years?
Well, I think entities probably had more of an outward focus and a reactive focus, looking for the off-the-shelf cheap fix, and there was little inward analysis, and I think it's already been alluded to that we probably all now understand there's this mix of culture, technology, policy, records management, and proactive activity that instead should replace kind of the magic bullet type thinking that existed before. And I think certainly unless you've been through this, there was a "we'll deal with it when we have to" mentality, and so too spot fixes, dealing with one lawsuit or one case and the electronic records associated with it and not diagnosing and solving the larger problem. Certainly, today some of the thinking I think has shifted, and people are now starting to put into place and understand their systems and the solutions for these problems in the absence of that big event that changes the thinking. Also, I think we've seen with the new rules certain amount of forward movement on creating already initial disclosures that should be ready to go, because you don't want to be working on this the day the litigation hits and you've got your conference coming up and you're trying to engineer all of this from the ground up at that time. And so certainly I think the focus also has become not only one of records management as a fundamental foundation to what's going on, but in terms of some of our thinking, we almost think of it in two parallel paths of the records management, but also a separate, distinct set of strengths and complexities that are litigation readiness, because you simply can't hold off the pressures that drive all of these while you're cleaning up from a records management perspective and ask for, you know, a 10-year or a time of 5 or 10 years while all that's happening, because the demands are here. And so we've taken along a shift in thinking that allows us, hopefully, the freedom to at least think about this in terms of the current challenges with electronic stored information for litigations, but also the larger records management utopia we hope to achieve, because certainly you can't hope to solve one without the other.
We're going to push our way out of electronic discovery, which we could stay in forever, I think. Carol, though, sort of closing out and going into the records management area, do you think we can employ record management tools to keep up with all the new technologies like VoIP phones, instant messengering, online collaborative pages, the next Star Trek-ish tools that come out there, or are we always going to be chasing rainbows here?
I think we're going to be chasing rainbows until we get companies like Microsoft and like EMC and like all these instant messaging and VoIP companies, until records management starts to be understood as an elemental process within each one of these products. In other words, they have to come records management ready. You can't go back and make them records management ready. So, yeah, we're going to be chasing rainbows until the software companies perk up and take notice.
Okay. I'm going to break down the records management dialogue and process into the components of technology and records management, legal, and I'll say the category. But, Rob, you were just someone just mentioned Microsoft, so I'll start with you.
Sure.
Given the fact that so much data is created using Microsoft tools on desktops, does Microsoft have any simple solution for the desktop to help manage electronic records?
Sure. So I think it was mentioned earlier on the call a couple of times. The answer is always it depends. And so I'm going to first sort of take a little step back and then talk to Carol sort of, you know, our companies like Documentum and Microsoft and taking notice, and I'll address that as well. And the answer there is absolutely yes. I think that the scenarios are wildly different for a small and mid-sized company versus an enterprise company. And so the guidance and the tools and the approach for different size companies in different industries is also going to be radically different, right? So when we think about records management and compliance, there's litigation issues, and then there's also just governmental requirements that we think about a lot. So whether it's Sarbanes-Oxley or Basel if in Europe, or the DoD requirements, the list goes on and on and on. So the approach that we're taking from Microsoft's standpoint is at the, let's call it the small, mid-sized company, and a simple approach is there basic document management and records management built into both our operating system and into Office? And with the release of both Vista and Office 2007, which literally just happened yesterday, we think that we've really come quite a long way in terms of basic content and records management and enhanced content services. So if those on the line happen to have the slides, you'll see on my slides this LiveLink ECM presentation that we did recently with OpenText, who creates a product called LiveLink. And if you look at those first two boxes of basic content services and enhanced content services, a lot of the stuff that people have been talking about historically being a large challenge with managing a record or a document over a life cycle, checking things in and out, finding the information, all of that stuff has been a major focus for us in both the new Vista and the Office 2007, because we've heard, in fact, as a largely regulated company, we've also dealt with this personally, this challenge of how do we manage records and lifecycle of records.
Tom Utiger, also in technology, any advice for companies concerned about sticker shock from improving electronic records management systems?
We often like to tell folks that their first records management project should really be less than $50,000. And generally what we tell people is rather than leap in, buy technology, and start deploying something, that they really need to sit back and think. And they need to spend the time to really think about what they really need, what the business process needs to be, what the technology process is, and what they really have inside their house. Because very often they can do some relatively simple process-oriented things on the business side to mitigate some of the problems on the technology side. And depending on which industry they're in, might eliminate many of their problems. However, this doesn't deal with, you know, the basic desktops or the email archiving issues, but you can address, sometimes you can address systems and processes where you're managing your invoices or your mainframe output or things of that nature. And then once you have a good vision of what you really need, then you can proceed to step out and start buying technology. But it's that first initial, don't go overboard looking for that silver bullet. As was mentioned earlier, in the world of e-discovery, everyone was looking for this off-the-shelf perfect solution that they could just buy. Records management right now is very much in the same place.
And Carl, this is Rob again. I would just jump in to agree with that point strongly. I mean, my personal experience with Sarbanes-Oxley, for example, we spent a lot of time with very, very large enterprise customers. And more often than not, the challenge was not software, but rather what's the process and how do I think about my risk mitigation as a company? And then we can talk about tools to go and, you know, tools shouldn't inhibit your ability to do great records management, but if you don't have a very strong understanding of the problem set, technology won't solve that problem.
Okay. Carol, you're often called in to help improve or create a stronger electronic records management program. Do you have some sort of a blueprint for starting the process?
Are you asking me and
Carol
Tom?
Carol Jotsky, yeah.
Okay.
What Tom can add in, too.
Yeah, we do, actually. The first thing we do, actually, is go in and we talk to them, but about, you know, what are your exact needs and where are your biggest pain points, where do you want to start? And then we go in, and one of the best things you can do is just start by creating a retention schedule, because the most elementary part of the retention schedule is not applying the retention, it's creating a classification system for all the corporate information. And that means interviewing all the secretaries and interviewing administrative assistants. It also means interviewing high-level people. But basically, you're interviewing every single work group in the enterprise to find out what do they have and what are their specific problems. And quite often, what you find are patterns of problems that often interface with technology or that are created by technology. There are huge numbers of workarounds that people are creating precisely for the problem that, for example, the current Microsoft product is attempting to fix. In other words, we don't go in and apply technology first. First, we go in and we apply standard records management procedures. Then we don't write their retention schedule right away. We write up our findings and say, this is what we found, and this is where we think you need to focus. And then Tom comes in. And Tom, you want to talk about what you do?
Absolutely. I mean, records management, it's been around for a long time. I mean, it really is a scientific discipline. It's been around for about 100 years, but before then, you know, 5,000 years ago, those Babylonians were doing basically all the same things except with clay tablets. The basic fundamental processes of records management don't change. It's a business-driven process that's about managing documents and not about managing data. So when we tend to walk into organizations, we try and help the IT organizations understand that they need to take a document-centric view of things rather than this data-centric. Because as IT people, we, you know, more data is better data. We're more excited. Look, we got more. We got terabytes of data. Isn't this exciting? We can do all these cool, neat things. But then they have to, of course, balance the value of having so much data against the risk of the documents. And so very often you need to help the IT people really just take a different view of what it is that their technology is doing. While it's neat and cool technology, you also have to balance that against, does it actually help the business risk? Does it help to mitigate business risk? Does it bring the business risk down? Are there relatively simple things that you can do to change your thinking? And often people want to start with email archiving because that's where the pain point is today, but often that's the worst place to start because it is a very complex and sophisticated problem to address, and we ask people to look back at simpler, easier things to begin the practice of records management in the IT world.
From an operations perspective, moving out of technology, Bill, you're tasked with responding to litigation and working in e-discovery. Do you feel e-discovery experience is helpful to work with records management to get a better process in place, or do you have to move at a faster speed?
Well, certainly I think that the quote-unquote e-discovery and litigation demands move at a faster speed, but I think they're an important driver for companies who have experienced and been kind of quote-unquote victims in large-scale litigations, and we've had some mass torts where the very first depositions don't get at the heart of the matter, the product, or the issues on the merits, but instead are of IT people and involve ex parte or preservation orders and the like. Being those early victims or going through that experience you mentioned, I think is an appropriate and unfortunately real driver so that companies who've been through that experience get a little bit more nimble and are more open to both the cost and now do see the benefit, but unfortunately have to reconcile the cost in a larger and quicker way than those companies that don't go through that kind of pain.
Linda, what are the obstacles you see from a record manager's perspective to develop the records management area further into electronic records?
Well, first and foremost is going to be the same barriers that we have had ever since I've been into records management. And even though records management has been around for a long time, it's always been the forgotten stepchild. It has been the happenings in the media and with large companies facing fines and penalties that has really brought records management to the forefront. It was a problem when we were working in a paper world. It has just multiplied tremendously because we're now in an electronic world, because people are freer to create more documents, distribute more documents, so that we have complicated the issues even further. But as we try to focus on resolving these issues, we have the same types of issues. First of all, resources and the cost. It was easier to manage paper and less costly to manage paper because we didn't have as much money up front in the purchase of systems and technology to handle the records. It was easier to ship them off to a storage facility. In addition to that, I think even though we've tried to educate all employees relative to their responsibilities and expectations and our records management program, there was always an assumption that somebody else took care of it, whether it was the records center or whether it was an admin assistant. It wasn't necessarily at the desktop of the attorney or paralegal who is working on a particular matter or case. So we have a tremendous barrier around culture to help employees understand that they have to take some ownership around this, that we can implement systems and processes, but they are going to have to take some ownership around this. And then once we do, then we have to monitor it. And we haven't quite figured out how we're going to monitor this once we do put it in place.
Yeah, that's a good lead into Jim, to this question I have for Jim Mikowitz. We all hear we should eat more fruit and vegetables, exercise more, work more seafood into the diet. The analogy I'm looking for is 60% of America are obese today, despite lots of discussion on this topic. Are we destined to be a fat nation when it comes to our electronic records? Is this discussion just an annual New Year's resolution? And is the politics of the issue or the human aspect which makes this so challenging?
Carl, I always wonder why you give me these questions. First off, I have shed 3 pounds since Thanksgiving, and we also got rid of 3 years' backlog of canceled checks. So I think
we're this is great.
Okay. Now, as far as this question, I got a couple of thoughts on this. I think we might be a fat nation as far as records management, especially if there's two kind of thoughts that are pervasive out there. Number one, it's cheap to keep records, especially electronic data that's stored. Number two, it's safe to keep records. In other words, any concerns about spoliation and ability to preserve if you just keep everything. So I think the kind of introduction of a lot of the archive systems were kind of brought in for those two purposes. One is it can make it cheaper to store data, and number two, it can also maybe preserve, and therefore it can make it safer. And I think that's kind of like a false safety, and also I think it's not necessarily clear that it really saves money. We have found, and Linda shared in a study that was done at DuPont, where keeping records past the retention period and being non-compliant was actually costly from a storage, but actually was more costly from the legal discovery process and what we had to incur as far as processing costs and review costs. So my feeling is that there is a pervasive thought out there that it's okay to keep things because it's either safe or it's cheap, and therefore I think it may very well be that we kind of stay kind of fat for a while.
You know, there's a great slide in the materials I'm not going to talk about, but there's some Seagate material that shows how cheap storage has gotten, and it compares what if cars were improved at the same level storage cheapness has occurred, and you should look at that later. It's just mind-blowing.
Carl, one of the things I was going to say about this is just in regards to, like, the culture itself, is that records management is not fun, and I know someone's got the button, but it's not easy. And if you're a records custodian of any sort, it's just not like going to be the top of your mind to do this. So this maybe monster that exists and kind of like, well, where do you ever start cutting back? Well, who wants to start really doing that? So I lead hope, and I know this is part of the technology discussion, that smart archiving systems could actually be in place to really go ahead and mimic or replicate the human decision-making process relative to keeping a record or not, and why keep a record in that classification system. I think we've all experienced at some point, it's just not easy to get people to always think about, wow, do I need to keep this, and if I do need to keep it, what category does it fall under? So I leave some hope that the process of decision-making relative to retention can actually be helped by the use of technology and the creation of smart archiving tools.
Linda, this is a great lead-in for a question I had on records management. Do you believe that records management doesn't get enough credit for being strategic thinkers within a company, or do records management personnel need to be thinking more strategically at a C-level?
I think there needs to be more strategic thinking. In the past, I've seen situations where a company will let the records management people figure this out. And in reality, you need to think strategically across the entire company. You need to have an understanding of the business needs. You need to think proactive. Too often, especially with the litigation, we're reactive and we need to be proactive. So we need to think of this at a much higher level and understand where technology is going. I mean, one of the problems that we have is that, for example, instant messaging. Everybody thinks it's a great tool. They don't quite understand the risk that you have when you implement or when you permit instant messaging into the work environment. So we need to think about that ahead of time and work with our senior leadership to make sure that they have an understanding that it's a strategic process. It's not something that we just react and manage the records as they are created. We think about how we are going to manage them going forward.
Now let's look at records management from a legal perspective. Jim Daly, you have a unique perspective given the fact your firm is really focused on this particular topic. However, now many law firms are getting actively involved in assisting clients with a records management function. What are the pros and cons of having a law firm deeply involved with this area? Or do law firms help in this area, or should they sit on the sidelines and wait for litigation?
Well, Carl, that's a great question. One of the challenges that a lot of clients have is that there are two things going on here. One is legal advice with respect to records retention, and one is legal advice with respect to representing those same clients in litigation. And there's a fundamental potential conflict between helping a company decide what needs to be kept and what doesn't need to be kept, and then also defending that client in litigation where those records themselves are going to be requested and argued and debated and battled about. So there's that potential conflict. There's also an appearance, at least, of appearance of conflict in terms of whether a company representing a client in the litigation is totally independent with respect to the cost and time of records review. That is to say, those law firms that actually review the electronic records and print records, for that matter, obviously charge for that service. And do they really have an incentive for reducing the funnel at the top? And do they have an incentive for partnering with the clients, the corporate clients, to keep only that which does need to be kept for business and legal reasons? So there's at least that perception of lack of independence. One reason why we started RDRW, Redgrave, Daly, Regan, and Wagner, was to try to focus on reducing legal risk and cost of not just e-discovery, but e-records compliance, and by trying to partner with corporate clients to stay out of the fray of the litigation and focus more specifically on what needs to be kept, how long, and how can we streamline that process, how can we reduce that risk and cost throughout the whole information management lifecycle.
Carol, I have a question emailed to me from the audience. You understand retention schedules are a big part of the record lifecycle. Are there any issues to watch out for in preparing these schedules?
Oh, yeah. A retention schedule in its most elementary form has a kind of Janus-like character. We've been talking about the liability side with e-discovery, and of course there's always a problem of just loss of information, but there's also the positive side, the asset side, where a retention schedule can actually help to make an organization more efficient by reflecting its business processes, because the records themselves are inputs, outputs, or decision tools for the business process. And so part of your inventory has to be, where does it fit within the business process? And even ask the question of, is it necessary, or is this the right form, or is this the right format, or are you the right person to be handling it? So as a person who helps companies create retention schedules, those extra legal issues are actually just as important. On the other side, the classification we create is truly a classification. It really is an art form that we've created over the last 100 years in the profession of records management. In fact, I might add, the first records manager that we can identify was at DuPont in 1910. So it is a wonderful irony that Linda's on the call today.
That was not Linda Davis, though.
No,
I don't think it was Linda Davis. But so companies were worrying about this 100 years ago, and it was primarily to make the companies more effective. So the liability side has risen as it's been more and more associated with e-discovery. And, of course, as we've had piles and piles of electronic records that are just sort of sitting around, and we can't seem to delete them no matter how hard we try. But then the other side of it is that the retention for something is more than just what does the law say. It's also how long do you need it? So, for example, one of the things we do is interview legal counsel and say, well, you know, how long do you see these questions of litigation coming up for this issue? There was a company I interviewed. It was one of the Kaiser companies. Wasn't in the direct line of the companies that made the Liberty ships, but they kept corporate information from 60 or 80 years ago to show that they were not a part of the Liberty ship so that they could avoid that litigation. Well, under any circumstances, that stuff would have been destroyed. Under any circumstances, under any law, under any business requirement, but they had a very particular issue that they needed to deal with. So the retention isn't just here's what the law says, here's when we want to get rid of it, here's what the regulations are. It's a much more complex issue than that.
Bill Dodaro, this all sounds like a lot of work. Say you oversee litigation in a large company which faces litigation fairly frequently. How long can you wait for records management to catch up to electronic records? And is there anything you can do in the interim? Hello?
I think Bill's probably attending to a litigation right now.
I'm not. I'm sorry. I think I was on mute for a moment. I don't think you can wait at all. I think that the utopia of catching up from a records management perspective, unless you can somehow convince the pressures that come in on litigation to cease while you do all of that, the battle becomes twofold, and I think you have to have and treat this almost as separate initiatives. And as you notch up your capabilities from a records management function, you can notch down some of the inefficiencies of your litigation and electronic discovery processes. But in fact, I don't think you can sit back and wait for the records management processes to more or less take hold and do nothing on the litigation side.
Okay, we have a question here from the audience from Chicago. If your company has a website, is the electronic trail created by a third party logging onto your site an electronic record for the purposes of e-discovery? What should companies be concerned about here with regards to record management? I'm going to give that to Jim Daly.
You need to hire a good attorney. And every situation is quite fact-specific. You know, it depends upon the content on the website, and is it relevant to any pending or reasonably anticipated litigation? So it's the content, not the container, that governs. In some instances where, for instance, the marketing and advertising conduct of a company is at issue, sure, that web content, public-facing, even internal-facing in terms of Wikipedia's blogs and the like, could very well be relevant. So it's intranet, extranet, internet, all those things you need to be concerned about.
Jim Mikewitz, I've spoken, this is the HR, human resources component of this area. I've spoken to a number of companies about this event. I had a great discussion with a Minneapolis-based international food service company about attending, and they were planning on bringing several lawyers, an IT person, and a records management professional to hear this discussion. However, most attendees, I believe, are single attendees per an organization. Do you have any reaction to the multiple department approach versus advice for single attendees?
Well, I'm seeing a recurring theme here. My last question had to do with dieting. Now it's the food services companies. Carl, I think you're trying to deliver some message to me. My feeling is that with the rules changes that went into effect today, and not to kind of put rain on certain people's parade here, but I didn't think they were such a big deal. And I thought a lot of the efforts that were done relative to managing records and also preparing for discovery, a lot of them had been practiced for a while to get to this point. However, I will say that one thing I think the rules have done is that it has forced some relationships that usually don't exist normally. And it's forced, really, I think, the dialogue between the legal group, the Office of General Counsel, the CIO's office, records management, HR, audit, finance. And in some ways, I guess you can say that the electronic records management itself, is almost serves as the glue to bring these parties together, because they all are, I guess I'll say, shareholders or stakeholders in all this. So therefore, I found that some of the real rewarding events have been when the different shareholders of this practice or this area come together for a seminar like ours, and then they can really see how it affects each other.
Carol, I know you've been doing a national survey on this point. Where do you think the records management function should be located within a company, between legal, IT, or operations? Or does it matter?
Frankly, it doesn't matter. The results of my survey were very interesting. There are a lot of people who are reporting through legal. There are also a lot of people reporting through administration. The only individual who indicated that they didn't feel the reporting relationship was good was through human resources. But I know of very successful programs that report through the CFO. I know very successful programs that report through the CIO. And frankly, the answer is it depends. It depends upon where your organization is, how it is configured, and where records management can get the support and audience that it needs to do what it does very well.
We're going to move into implementing a record management solution. Rob, you suggested that when we talked earlier before the presentation that there are some out-of-the-box solutions for records management issues. Would you care to expand on that?
Sure. So there's multiple levels. I would say that the base level out of the box is certainly using some of the basic components in Microsoft's, both the operating system and SharePoint and Office around document management. So that's sort of the first level. The next level is as you get into more specialized stuff. There's lots of companies out there, Documentum, OpenText, Hummingbird, FileNet, that provide specialized solutions built around either different industries or different regulations. And so these companies have invested a lot of money in, around IP that's really tuned to specific scenarios and situations. And what we're seeing in the market actually is very interesting is the large consolidation of these larger enterprise content management companies. And so I expect to see enterprise content management and records management is really a concept that's going to expand beyond just a content management and records management play. And I think we're seeing that already with some of these roll-ups. In fact, Oracle also recently bought an enterprise content management company as well.
Tom, let's say we do everything right with today's resources and setting up a process. What are the technological pieces that are still missing to automate the record management process?
One of the basic problems that that's missing is a standard language for communicating. One that we've all talked about on this call in various different ways, how we need to get the various components. If you go with a single vendor solution, you know, all their stuff talks to each other. If you have a multi-vendor environment, where you've got some Microsoft, some EMC, you've got some IBM, except, and you've got some SAP, and you want to apply records management to all of those items using a single file plan or retention schedule, then you begin running into problems. It takes some time to wrap a solution around that, and so we have some problems there. We have disconnects. So what we're missing is a common language between that the vendors have all adopted to allow you to do different parts of the records management process. You might have a content management or several content management systems. In fact, at one particular client we interacted with, due to their desire to go and acquire lots of banks out there, they ended up with over 100 different content management systems. And in fact, some of those systems are homegrown. Some of those systems were written by vendors that are no longer in business. So we have lots of problems there. We have these systems that may have terabytes of data in it, but we have no technical support and no path forward from the vendor to apply records management. And in situations like that, you've got to migrate the data, do some consolidations, maybe select a strategic platform to move on to. And these are all questions that take some time to really plan out, figure out what is the best strategy and approach for your organization. In some cases, one of the most important things to do is you may just write your own custom records management wrapper around the solution because it may be that particular product may be just too critical to your organization and you have to do some custom coding potentially.
So, Carl, could I jump in? This is Rob.
Sure.
I want to sort of talk about where the industry is headed and some. I'd agree historically with that perspective. I think what you're seeing is, I'll use two examples, SAP and OpenText. What you're seeing is a definite recognition by the industry, not just Microsoft, but all the large vendors, of this interop problem. And so there's a couple of big technical advances and partnership things that are starting to come out. So the first is around the concept of federated search, where I can enter a search term in through my Windows desktop or through a SharePoint interface or through a Documentum interface or an OpenText. And with the concept of federated search, I'm now able to search across multiple back-end repositories. So I think the advancements in the search technology will continue to evolve, and I think that you're going to see a much heavier reliance on, for existing records, a better paradigm to search across multiple back-end systems. So that's one area I think that the future is very different than the past. And the second is explicit integration scenarios that many vendors are working on. And again, I'll just use two. SAP and Microsoft, for example, have done this product where I can actually integrate and access stuff sitting in my ERP system through multiple ways in a front end of Office. And OpenText has actually gone even further and sort of said, hey, enterprise content management, you've got stuff sitting in your Oracle system, stuff sitting in your SAP system, and stuff sitting in your Exchange and Outlook systems. You know, they've written some interesting codes that actually allow you to connect all of those things together. And then another approach is document migration on the back end that Documentum is spending a bunch of time, which says, hey, you know, I'm DoD certified in my Documentum repository, and so I know what kind of rules, and as an IT professional, I can set a rules engine that says, if document contains certain types of information or has certain profiles, I'm going to migrate it out of, let's say, a SharePoint repository or some other repository and move it to my Documentum back end. So I think, you know, we certainly aren't where we need to be as an industry, but there is a very significant level of investment and a very high level of awareness across, I would say, all the industry-leading enterprise content management companies that this is a problem that we absolutely have to solve, and we're actively working on it in kind of multiple dimensions.
Tom actually mentioned something about the old documents or systems that a bank had. Jim Mikowitz, I heard a few weeks ago when we were at the Georgetown eDiscovery Conference, references made about the problems of preserving legacy data, which no one knows what's in the system or maybe even how to read it. This can be old data or data acquired in a transaction. The other area is the record stored, say, in Iron Mountain with readers provided by a third-party vendor to read. What do you do with that stuff?
Ignore it or burn it. No, I think this is interesting the way you phrase the question, Carl, is the problems of preserving legacy data, because I look at it maybe from a different perspective. The problem in preservation may be your inability to recover or retrieve that data. That may be a problem as far as preservation. I see the problem being the flip side, which is to be able to identify the contents of legacy data so you can make a decision relative to keeping it or not. And that may have nothing to do with preservation, but more having to do with retention. So my feeling is that the problem really is for companies to be able to do almost like a quick peek, because a lot of times the legacy data is not simply cataloged or indexed in a way that you can just make a quick decision. But I'd be interested in hearing Jim Daly's perspective on this, but I think we've become so concerned about preservation that we lean towards right away, well, is this data that we need to preserve right away versus how can we get rid of this stuff if it's been around for so long and we haven't done anything with it? Likelihood is that it probably doesn't have much value to it and you can get rid of it. So my feeling is that the problem with legacy data more has to do with the ability to identify the content so an informed decision can be made relative to retention and potentially preservation.
Jim, you can take Jim Daly, you can take one of Jim Mikowitz's questions about testicular fortitude with getting rid of electronic records. Mm-hmm. One of the panelists made that reference. You know, why do you think that's required of companies before they delete, you know, legacy data or anything?
Well, I think we should use the phrase intestinal rather than
okay.
Yeah, there's a following our food theme. But I think Jim Mikowitz was correct in saying that the main thing here is to have a record that you can almost kind of play back to a court or a regulator demonstrating that you have been thoughtful and uniform and consistent to the extent possible in identifying electronically stored information on large volume media, legacy media, things for which you no longer have the hardware or software to read. And it's in that kind of retrospective, after-the-fact, anecdotal type of exercise that you've got to be as, credible as possible. It doesn't have to be bulletproof or perfect, but certainly you need to be able to demonstrate that you've been very, very thoughtful and consistent. So, yeah, it does take, it takes courage. It takes courage to cast that net out, particularly in a large corporation, to your different data centers and your users, to gather that stuff, to try to inventory it and identify what it is, looking at all manners of human and technical information that might exist. And then, but at the end of the day, you have to make a risk management decision as to how do you weigh the possibility that there might be something that is unique and not duplicated or not migrated to a current system on that, versus the cost that it takes to just manage that and store that in a way that it doesn't degrade, or to try to spin that tape, for instance, and get off of it something that may or may not be relevant. Those are difficult calls, but I suspect that a lot of companies, given the new federal rules and the heightened visibility on having to declare what electronically stored information you're going to review and what you're not going to review will lead a lot of companies to have to, bite the bullet, hold their nose, and get on with it.
Carl, just one follow-up to that. It's
sure.
A subtle plug for Jim Daly and what he offers his clients. But one of the points I tried to make at the Georgetown conference a couple weeks ago was the challenge to the law firms to be able to be more risk, less risk-averse. I mean, for companies to make these decisions, I mean, they know what they've got. They can do the inventory. They can come up with a process, I think, to determine, what is has value as far as retention, what doesn't. But ultimately, it comes down to a defensibility issue. And this is where I think law firms could really serve their clients well by able to say, you know what, we've overseen the process. It seems reasonable. It seems responsible. They've identified materials that have no retention value, and they destroy those materials. And if that issue comes up, let the law firm take the hit for that. So I see that there's very few law firms that are willing to stick their neck out against this intestinal fortitude to really go ahead and represent their clients well, because that's what really is the key here, is not just have the company on the hook, but have really a law firm that gets paid well to go ahead and to take that risk management decision.
Okay, I've got a few questions queued up here from the audience, but this is one I definitely want to ask, because I have friends and there are entrepreneurs I know in the audience who are at record management sort of companies that are creating tools. We all agree, Tom made the point, and so did Rob, that there are still a lot of work that needs to be done to develop electronic record management tools. So how do technology companies loaded with VC money, say a few million dollars and some new ideas, get a corporation's attention, given the fragmented status of records management within a company? I mean, it could be in IT, it could be in legal, it could be in operations area that oversees this area. Do you have any advice?
So
this is Tom. Okay. I'd like to hop in there, having done a bit of that particular path myself. The real answer is you need to hop in and find some interesting customers and begin working the problem through a series of proof of concepts with them. We've found that as we've worked with the very large corporations around some of these records management issues, trying to work out some of these interesting technical integrations with some of these very large customers that we've worked with, is that we had some really great ideas, some really, really cool records management ideas, and then reality met, those cool ideas met reality of trying to actually implement them, and we have learned and taken away so much from the process of actually working with mid-sized companies about what's really needed in the world of records management. It's a tough one in getting the attention of very large companies, but partnering strategies, working and filling in those gaps that the big boys aren't doing, that EMC, Documentum, even these days Oracle jumping into the scene and Microsoft jumping into the scene, there's still huge gaps in their portfolios that can be filled in and partnering.
Do you have anything to add, Linda?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in some of our negotiations with different software vendors and implementing programs, one of the things that we have recognized now, understanding that a vendor has more than one client or customer, is understanding the different work practices and understanding the workflow within an organization, that one size does not fit all, and a tool that is delivered, there has to be some flexibility and some ability to configure those to meet the workflow practices within the different companies. And that's probably been our biggest challenge. Within DuPont, we've often, in the very beginning, it was a matter of volume, the number of records. We have 60,000 employees. How do we implement a tool that will, and we're a global organization, how do we implement tools like that? And it's been very difficult in working with a vendor. You have to establish that working partnership and an alliance in order to get a tool that's really usable for us.
And from Microsoft's perspective, I think the thing that I've seen most in the startup community that has been successful is deep domain expertise and very narrow focus. So domain expertise can take being an expert in a certain set of regulatory scenarios. Another one could be wiring up a bunch of legacy systems. Another could be thinking about the domain of device independence. And so, you know, I'm an enterprise and I've got lots of people running around with lots of disconnected devices. How can I help those things sync and tie into an existing records management? Whatever the scenario is, being a deep domain expert, as companies like Oracle and Microsoft spread out more, I'll call, of the plumbing and horizontal stuff, and you know, moving out into those edge sort of extended services is where the real big new opportunities, in my opinion, are, as well as providing deep domain expertise in a systems integration scenario.
Okay, I'm going to give this to Bill Ladero because it sounds like a legal question. Should you worry about creating a proprietary system that houses your documents/data that may make it difficult for third parties to read the data documents via a user-friendly interface?
Well, certainly I think we have freedoms in the absence of litigation or regulation to have proprietary systems that suit our business needs and that help. I would raise the issue, though, that with the new federal rules, there are certainly latitudes that adversaries can have in terms of demanding how that business stored data is produced in terms of specifying the method of production or productions, perhaps. And so, you know, that would be a worry for me. I mean, certainly, again, tailoring and using a proprietary system, you have the freedom to do, but I would encourage the back-end complexities that might come into play, knowing that that data might have to be produced and having adversaries either demand the infrastructure necessary to read that data or acquiring it and then looking at it themselves will and has become an issue in litigations we've faced. So I would think about that as you're designing that system on the front end.
Carol, this is for you. What kind of problems did Carol mean or encounter when she discussed interviewing people towards developing a retention schedule?
Oh, that's a whole course in itself. Interviewing skills are, in some ways, they're rather pedestrian. But a lot of the biggest problem is just getting a large enough chunk of people's time, getting them to understand that this is important, and getting them to understand that somebody else who is important is behind this. And it doesn't matter if you are speaking to a C-level executive or to a filing clerk, if the person has information and they don't think that they're interested in giving it to you, you can't get it out of them. And so as you speak to people, obviously there are certain skills. You look at them, you turn off your cell phone, you give them your full attention, you keep your notes, you act respectful, but it's also a very time-consuming thing because with each work group, you could spend from 2 to 4 hours interviewing them in order to get the information you need. So a lot of it is just getting enough thumb screws from on high to get people to give you the time that is necessary.
Okay, this is a sort of a five-part question here, but it came from a presentation Deidre at PACNAC, who owns PSS. She gave an interesting description of how companies should approach their electronic records dilemma, and she cited Maslow's hierarchy of needs being air, water, food, sleep, and sex. So let me break them down into a records management perspective. Let's say air is the legal hold process, the first basic need. Bill Ladero, first, could you define a legal hold process, and then do you have any advice in implementing and strengthening legal hold processes?
Yeah, I mean, defining it is kind of a tough job, but let me try. Certainly, and your question teased it up appropriately, this is a process. It's not simply and almost belatedly, if you will, just sending out a notice, quote unquote. Instead, it is a system and a process that needs to respect the organization's infrastructure in terms of where data is, how it's controlled, auto-deletion and the like, understanding where your vulnerabilities are so that even if your well-intentioned are well thought through and well put in place, you may have short time to get your systems to respect the quote-unquote hold process you're talking about.